You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
Hi, this is Michael Silverblatt, and welcome to Bookworm. Today my guest is Joseph Heller, the author most recently of Closing Time, which is a successor of sorts to Catch-22. The author, of course, as well, of Something Happened, Good as Gold, God Knows, No Laughing Matter, Picture This, and now Closing Time. I thought I'd begin by asking, of all the many sad and painful jokes you've told over your career, which do you think is the saddest?
I don't tell jokes. I don't tell jokes. I don't listen to jokes. In Closing Time, I think your siren says he can't stand jokes. I write novels, and in the novels there are jokes. And if people make jokes in a novel, they're often very bad jokes, deliberately so, to help characterize the person. Now, are you asking what's the worst joke I told?
No, the saddest.
Make it multiple choice. Give me five jokes from the works of Heller, and I'll tell you what the saddest is.
Oh, I guess I don't mean jokes as in punchlines. I mean, you know, jokes as the discovery, as in Closing Time, that there's an amusement park in hell. Jokes of the sort that Catch-22 is a sick joke.
Oh, or I think I would go, because of your adjective sad or saddest, my mind goes immediately to Something Happened in some of the lines in that. And one of them is, I know what I want to be when I grow up. I want to be a little boy again. And another one, he says, I wish I could believe in God. And that now reminds me of the last line in God Knows of King David. I want my God back, and they give me a girl. they are jokes, but they're jokes only because the way they're phrased. I think in each of the ones I've just gave you, I'm expressing some kind of very, very deep and lifelong yearning on the part of the person speaking that way.
Well, there's one, of course, in Closing Time. They ask if God can make a mistake. And yes. And the answer is, if God can do anything, he can make a mistake.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you about, I guess I'm going to ask you questions at random, because over the years of reading you, there have been so many questions. But I guess the thing still that I loved most are the sentences in Something Happened. I think of the writer of that book as a hero. A man who patiently wrote a certain kind of sentence over and over and over again.
The sentences in Something Happened were part of the structure and part of the emotions that were being expressed. And they were dealt with more conscientiously than most readers would observe. And they were fashioned to indicate the frame of mind of the speaker. All of Something Happens in the first person. And as the novel progresses and his confessional laments proceed, the sentences change to indicate a kind of tension growing up in him. And in one chapter, the chapter when he's dealing with his son, almost a breakdown. In the first chapter or two or three chapters, he is fastidiously correct in his grammar. And if he departs from standard English into colloquial English, he will have a parenthetical remark as though to let the reader know that he knows he is being technically incorrect. When he gets to the emotional parts, the sentences grow longer, the parenthetical interpolations, if that's the right word, grow longer and longer. And when he's dealing with his son, toward whom he has an extremely painful relationship, possibly psychologically pathological, you will have the parenthetical asides being growing and growing, some of them going home for a page or two, replacing the the cloud of sentences in which he does speak. So I think you're right about something happened. I think that the author that is heroic for another reason. He spent 12 years writing a book dealing with monotony, apathy, boredom.
Well, it reads to my mind, I'm not talking about the subject matter, with such breathing patience and tenderness. I mean the tenderness of someone laying sentences out to be perfectly colorless, to make no mistakes,
that's,
you know?
That's me.
It seemed to me to be beautiful.
I'll be frank with you. It's what you're saying is true about me in all of my books. I am not a natural writer. Written language does not come easy to me. The thoughts in all my fictions, the subject matter, the episodes, the scenes, the exchanges, they can come to me with the speed of light. The laborious challenge of putting them down on paper in a literary way that is, to my mind, consistent with what I have in mind requires me to write and rewrite almost every sentence in every book.
Well, I always thought that Something Happened had been terribly underappreciated, but it seems to me to be at the same time to be tremendously influential. Oddly enough, I think it's an influence on American Psycho. I think it really has shaped a certain kind of terrifying and relentless narrative. And it seems to me that in Europe, when Thomas Bernhardt does this, for instance, in the wake of Beckett, that he's recognized and praised, Something Happened still seems to be a book that people speak of as if somehow someone trying to write Catch-22 again had gone left instead of right.
No, it's changing. To the extent that you're right, it is changing. The past half year, when I've been talking to people like you and being interviewed by others, more and more and more and more and more often, the question will ask me, what's my favorite book? And I almost can sense what they want me to say, but I answer that if I had to choose a favorite, it would be Something Happened, for one reason because of what it is, and the second because it is and was, to my mind, the most difficult of my works to do and do successfully. Catch-22 is fairly, relatively easy for me because it involves humor, it involves farce, it involves comedy, and it involves a morbid gloom, and all of those things come naturally to me. Whereas in Something Happened, there is humor. If asked to, I could read to an audience for 1 hour from Something Happened, and they would laugh at each section I pick. But the humor had to be consistent with the subject matter. And since it's a first-person narrative, it could only be humor that can come from that main character and not from Joseph Heller. So I was restricted to that as well. And the challenge of producing a book of that length, in which almost nothing really happens, and have it succeed as a book, was a risky one. I think I was a fool to attempt it.
It's my impression that until Closing Time, the Closing Time has been your most difficult book
It has been my most difficult book to write for a number of reasons. One is that in terms of theme, it encompasses more than in any other my novel, more ideas, more thematic material than any of the others. Another one is it involves a style of writing which I've avoided through all my career, and that is in dealing with two characters, two Jewish friends who were born in Coney Island, went to war, survived the war, and succeeded. It involves what I think was realistic writing, or that kind of writing which is often characterized, defined as realism, dealing with those people with the intention, the tacit message to the reader that what you're reading about these people is intended to be believed as having actually happened. Now, in none of my books do I make that suggestion. All my books are so extravagant in concept and so exaggerated and so extreme that the contract with the reader is that this is not realism. It doesn't mean it's not real and it's not true, but this is a type of literature in which extremes are the techniques. Now, I've never done that before. I've never fully characterized a person, a character in my novel. I know this about Catch-22, that there are no three-dimensional characters in Catch-22. And in my other books as well. And Something Happened, I go deeper and deeper and deeper into Bob Slocum as a character, but there is a psychological surrealism in his obsessive compulsions and in his various, conflicts, psychological conflicts, which have never been resolved. Maybe God knows, and King David is. Yeah, he probably is. But that's a first-person story. In closing time, part of the narrative deals with Sam Singer and Lou Rabinowitz, and their families and their lives. And it's presented, I think, with a very gentle and unexaggerated and undramatic affection on my part. So although there have been events in their lives which in other books or in plays might be the climax of various upheavals and tragedies, they are not presented that way in Closing Time. In Closing Time, the extreme actions, the extreme exercise of my imagination is reserved for Yossarian and the people that are around him. So there are at least two different styles of prose writing in Closing Time. And for someone like myself, who just told you I find writing difficult, writing even, this was exceptionally difficult.
Now, the Sammy Singer and Lou Rabinowitz characters, are they part of a project that I believe I read once that you were thinking of doing a novel called Peddler's Cry?
I'd never heard that before.
About Brooklyn in the
1930s. Yeah, I know what you're saying. I never heard that I had said I was thinking of doing a novel, Peddler's Cry. It might have come up in an extemporaneous conversation, uh-huh, such as we're having here. It probably comes from Good as Gold, where Gold remembers Coney Island, the Italian fruit peddlers coming,
right,
and their cry was this: if you got money, come down and buy. You got no money, stay home and cry. Now, and that was something I used to hear in Coney Island from the peddlers, and it could very well be that when asked shortly after Good as Gold, I may have said that, but it was not stated as a serious intention.
Now, in a certain way, interestingly, I thought the Closing Time was structured like Catch-22, in the same way that Catch-22 has three major invasions that get circled around. Yeah. Here there seem to be three major narrators. There's Sammy, there's Lou, and there's Yossarian. And there's all of their past. They're all like whirlpools around which the events of the novel swirl.
I would not think of them as being a similar in structure. And structure of Catch-22 is designed intentionally from the beginning to be confusing to the reader, to reflect the confusion of the situation in which the characters were. It was a reckless choice, an impudent choice, and maybe one of the reasons the book was not successful in the first several months. People just did not want to bother with me. Reviewers were annoyed at having to deal with a type of fiction they were not familiar with. I don't think we have that in Closing Time. We have different points of view. I think we have four in Closing Time. We have Sam telling his story in the first person, Lou in the first person, Joseph Heller telling Yossarian's story, which includes Milo Minder by the others. And every once in a while there's a short chapter in which it's still Joseph Heller, but he's then presenting himself as the omniscient narrator. So in a few pages he can tell you that Sam Singer, that Yossarian's office with Milo Minder is in a building that Sam Singer used to work with when the building was Time Magazine. There are those four voices. I don't think there's ever anything deliberately presented here that doesn't follow standard narrative technique. I believe when I talk about Yossarian from the very beginning, I introduce him, I let you know where he is, I give you an idea of his age, and I tell you what he's been doing for the past 20 years. And with Sam and Lou, it's that clear also. You may be right. Now, in Catch-22, it doesn't center around three major characters, but it centers, I think, around three missions, the Bologna, Avignon, and I forget the other one. In Catch-22, all of these have taken place in the past before the time of the novel begins.
And so, too, are the paths of Sam and Lou. And it struck me as well, you see, I'm going to differ with you slightly. I don't think that there is a mistake at the beginning of Catch-22.
No, it's not a mistake. Now we know that. I know that now, and you know it now, and we know that because the book has survived. But many, if not most, of the reviews of Catch-22 are very unfavorable. I don't know if you saw the New York review of last week by Christopher Buckley, who he likes Closing Time. He goes into the history of Catch-22 and quotes from about five or six of reviews and important publications that time, all of them dismissing the novel.
Yes, but when has a reviewer, I mean, when in America, book reviewers, they're as bad as politicians.
Well, yeah, but there
very
are...
Very few good ones.
There are a few good ones, and it's the good ones that kept Catch-22 in print. Robert Brustein was one, Nelson Organ was. It was not a mistake. I know that now, and I think readers know that now, that the beginning of Catch-22 is now very exciting to them. And it's exciting to them for exactly the reasons other people complained about when it came out. It is original. It is novel. It is impertinent. It is impudent. It's irreverent, not only in the way it expresses things, but it's almost irreverent to the concept of novels, a history, a tradition of novels. It just breaks that tradition almost from the first paragraph.
And I'm going to suggest that in the entirety of Closing Time, that there's a similar intention.
There is.
That each time a chapter ends, you don't know who you'll be with or where you'll be next.
Right.
That, as has been said in most of the reviews, but to me, wonderfully, all three characters have sons named Michael.
Yeah.
Frequently, there's the feeling that I was saying this the other day to Pauline Kael. I think the book wants to make the reader feel what it is to feel the confusions of aging, of wondering, you know, Michael, which Michael? Who Michael? Michael from where? That it's very concerned with degeneration and the rotting of everything, not just the body but the city. And I think that, you know, what is thrilling about the book is in its kind of scary amusement park ride quality.
I'm not disagreeing. I think I may have misunderstood you. All of what you just said is there. There is a structure to Closing Time which is unlike the structure of any novel, other novel I could think of. Just as with Catch-22 when I was writing, I could not think of any other novel that was similar to it in content and the method of presentation. I will say the same thing about Closing Time. Where I may have misunderstood you was in my feeling you were saying that the structures of Catch-22 and the structures of Closing Time were similar. Well, and that's what I was disagreeing with. I can tell you where they are similar. They each begin in the same location with Yossarian in a hospital, and they each end with the same decision by Yossarian, to leave where he is and to venture out as a with something in the as a free action. His ability to say no to what seems to be common sense to the people around him. In Closing Time, he's underground. There may be a nuclear attack, and people around him, they're going to stay down no matter how long it takes. Even his own son won't venture out, and he does. And in Catch-22, he rejects the very tempting, corrupt offer of his superiors to become one of them and becomes a fugitive instead. Those, in that sense, the structures are similar.
I'm talking to Joseph Heller on the publication of his recent novel, Closing Time.
A difference between Catch-22 and Closing Time and the other novels is this. There is resignation in Closing Time. very much to the sordid and very much to the unwanted and undesirable and wretched and tragic is presented, but it's presented as part of the surroundings. And there is no real discussion as to what can be done to help the poor, what can be done to help the homeless. Even Yosarian moves through this the way you and I move through it in our respective cities, and we, by being apathetic to it, we have come to accept that as being normal in our culture at this time, normal and natural. And that, to me, is part of the tragedy.
Well, it seems to me that Yosarian, too, has become, in closing time, a realist. His major concern seems to be, and this I found, again, heartbreaking, that his son... It feels like, you know, someone saying, put money in your purse,
yes.
You know,
yeah.
That his son earned enough money so that when Yosarian dies, there's enough for him to be taken care of since he doesn't know enough to take care of himself. Mm-hmm. When Yosarian flirts with a nurse, his major concern is, does she have major medical if she were to leave? and so he has become, at long last, having been originally a prototype for all sorts of people in the counterculture, he has become nevertheless representative as well of the financial concerns of the 80s.
He has, and I think I make it unmistakable in closing time, he has been, what would be the word, compromised. Not corrupted, but compromised. And part of the truth of closing time is this: if you want to keep living in our society, if you want to live a normal life, not an eccentric life and not a criminal life, one has to adjust to a large extent to the conditions in which he lives. And I pick up Yosarian 30 or 40 years after Catch-22. Deliberately, there's a big gap, and much of it is not explained. And he has done what I have done, and all my idealistic friends have done over the years. We have accepted whatever it is, the free market enterprise, capitalism, a government that pretends to be peace-loving but goes to war more often than any other war, a system that gives special advantages to the very wealthy so they become even more wealthy. And in that circumstance, Yosarian, Sam Singer, Lou Rabinowitz, and Joseph Heller have existed and have survived and have prospered to a certain degree, prospering while very, very much material and very, very much idealistic and spiritual has been decaying, I think, steadily and inevitably and progressively. And I feel that, I don't know if this comes through in the book or not, I feel we'll continue to degenerate.
I'm curious. I have two more questions here. One is that for each book, and this may just be happenstance, but Good as Gold seems to bear the traces of what I know to have been your reading at the time of Dickens. And Closing Time seems very marked by the Germans, by Mann and Wagner. And I wondered if you could...
No, it's... I did read and reread Thomas Mann again, but that was only after I was committed myself to the book and knew I was going to make allusions to German literature and to German music. So it was not inspired by them.
Oh, no, I didn't mean that. I just meant... That Dr. Faustus, Mann's Dr. Faustus,
yes,
is one of my favorite books. When the devil appears to the composer in chapter 13, it's such a shocking thing.
Yeah.
And you know, this book is full of almost suggestions of a compromise or sale to the devil that never literally occurs, but seems always on the verge of occurring, as if somehow or other the transaction occurred 2 weeks ago and one is saying.
The Dr. Faustus is there, and one of the touches I liked was, and it's consistent with much of the book, is bringing the imaginary and the real, blending them together. I have fictional characters mingling to an extent with real characters. And what I liked, again, one of the tricks that pleases Heller, one of the inventions, was in Mann's book you have this composer, Avian Levikun, who never lived. He's a fictional character. And his major work was The Apocalypse, which we know is never performed, even though Mann said it was performed once in 1926. But toward the end of the book, as we're moving toward my ending, which is both funny and serious and apocalyptic and real, Yossarian and his guide, the man who knows everything, Gaffney, on the speaker system in the bus terminal, they are hearing music which they now recognize as being from the Levikun Apocalypse, which has never been composed.
And it's playing for a wedding, which seems to be the other major theme of Closing Time. Marriage seems to be
marriage is the
odd virtue that the book
and it's also unique in Heller's work. And I did not know this until the book was completed. Very often, I don't know what I've done in the novel until I read good critics or until I have discussions about it and I'm questioned. I did not realize that I was presenting marriage as an ideal state, and that the two truly sympathetic characters in the book, Lou and Sam, have married, raised children, never thought of divorce, and had satisfying marriages. Another thing I did, which I've not done, I don't think many American male novelists do, I've treated women very, very sympathetically in this book. I've treated them as real people and in many ways superior to the men they're married to. The wife of Sammy Singer and the wife of Lou Rabinowitz are admirable people.
Glenda and Claire.
Yeah, Claire, yes. And I realized after the book was done that I cannot think of an American male author, novelist, or short story writer who ever treats women as anything but destroyers.
In the earlier Heller books, there was very much a serviceman's attitude toward women,
yes.
Hooting and commenting, yeah, and appreciating
and Yossarian has compunction. Toward the end of the book, where in Catch-22, just before the last scenes, the book turns kind of solemn, Yossarian berates himself. He realizes that Nately's whore is a woman in the book, and he wants to find her or her kid sister to help him. And he suddenly realized he never even took the trouble to find out what her real name was. And he does that, and I think I used the word compunction, or with a stab of guilt.
I've never heard you talk about Alice in Wonderland, and it seems to me that in the...
It's in all my books.
Yes, in all of your books.
Yes, it's in all my books, especially the contradictions I find in the use of language or in situations in which involve the use of language to mean different things. And either Alice in Wonderland or Through the Looking Glass, the Queen says, it means whatever I want it to mean. I'm very much aware of that.
Well, it makes me so happy because, you know, Humpty Dumpty, for instance, says that when he makes a word work so hard, he pays it extra. I've been talking to Joseph Heller, the author most recently of Closing Time, on the occasion of the publication of that book by Simon & Schuster. Thank you for joining me.
It has been my pleasure.
My associate producer is Melinda Siegel. The engineer today is Scott Fritz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next week on Bookworm.
To the jungles you can go in books. To the land of ice and snow in books.
As you ramble through the pages, books will take you through the ages. Back to days of old when knights were bold in books.
Books, books, books.
Books make you laugh and sing. Books tell you everything. They're your treasure, friends in prose and rhyme.
Now it's book of the mouse pop time.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.